I got a question. Why would a team, and maybe James Ham can
bring James
can
in, yeah,
help answer. Why would any team pay one of these guys early if they're under the restricted free agent area? Like, why not just let the market dictate what you'll be paid? If you want a top flight deal, I guess maybe you'd do it if you're going to pay him more than the less than the max. But if they're
asking, some of those,
yeah. So you would do that because maybe you're even getting a deal. But if he was asking for the max and you weren't sure about it, all right, we'll see what happens. You're a restricted free agent. We'll decide whether or not we want to match it or if somebody even offers you that.
Well, one of the problems is if you go into your final year of your contract, then, yeah, at the end, you're a restricted free agent as long as they place a qualifying offer on you, right? Mm. And the qualifying offer for Kuminga is going to be huge because he's a, like, what was it, number six pick in the draft. So his qualifying offer is going to be pretty substantial. But you can give him that. You have to give him the qualifying offer, right, in order to retain his restricted free agent status. Well, he has two choices. He can go out and shop and try to find a better deal. He can try to find a long-term deal with someone else, and then it goes back to the club, and they have to determine whether or not they'll match that deal. So we've seen this, right? It's the offer sheet from a different team. But what a player can also do is he can go, all right, I'll accept the qualifying offer. And now, as a team, you're done. Because the qualifying offer means that he plays out this fifth year, and then he's an unrestricted free agent and can go anywhere he wants. Mm. And you don't have any rights to him. And not only that, if I'm not mistaken, because in this situation, his Larry Bird rights would be at risk. In order to trade him, you have to get his approval in order to trade him in that final year. So it becomes really complex. And what you do is basically you get a player for cheap for 1 year, but then you throw away all goodwill. And, you know, I think we're all watching this play out with the 49ers, right? Where Brandon Ayuk has been ruled out for the year. He's torn ACL, torn MCL, like catastrophic knee injury. And we all sat here like, just sign the contract, man. Just sign the contract. We just kept saying it. And this is why he held out. He held out because of a situation like this where he wouldn't have guaranteed money. He wouldn't have control of his own destiny moving forward if he didn't play hardball. Now, I don't think like the NBA is slightly different in the way this all works out. But still, like having a 5-year deal or a 4-year deal is a lot more reassuring for a young guy than not knowing. You know, and again, you better be sure that you're going to get paid by somebody else. And there's no way to guarantee you're going to get paid by someone else, especially like if you're a player like Kuminga, where you're kind of on the bubble as far as how much someone's going to pay you. You know, again, like Jalen Green was going to get 30 plus million from somebody, whether it was the Rockets or someone else, and the Rockets chose to do the deal.
Sidebar, Brandon Ayuk's situation, a little different because according to multiple sources and even himself to a certain degree, he was just sitting on the deal. Like
it's different with the NFL versus the NBA because the NBA is very specific. You have very specific time windows where you have to sign a contract. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any of the deals today surprise you?
No.
I don't think there's anything surprising out there. I'm a little surprised that Kuminga didn't reach an extension with him at all, but
yeah. So I'm a little surprised that Moses Moody did a 3-year, $39 million deal, because if I'm him, like I'm over the moon frustrated with the Golden State Warriors and wouldn't want to play for them for 3 years after this year. You know, it feels like Moody's a much better player than the Warriors allow him to be. And every time he plays the Kings, he looks spectacular. Mm-hmm. And then he plays 14 minutes, and you're like, what in the world is happening here? I think the one other one is like Jalen Suggs. That's a lot of money, $150 million for Jalen Suggs over 5 years. I don't know that you're going to really get true value out of an okay offensive player, a great defender. But there's a big difference between a great defender making $15, $20 million a year and a great defender making $30 million. You have to be a lot more than just a defender at $30
million. Big time money for Jalen Johnson also.
Yeah.
Atlanta Hawks is.
Yeah. Ooh, I missed that one.
150. Well, it just happened. Just under the deadline, I'm assuming, as it's getting reported right now.
Wow.
And this is
150.
Yeah. And this is what we, because obviously it's our checkbooks, this is what we're looking at next year with Keegan, no?
Yeah.
This is it, right?
I mean, it sure does look like seeing all these deals right now,
mm-hmm.
you might as well just pencil them in for a close to a max money deal.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like with between you. 120 and 150 for 5 years. I mean, I don't see any way around it. Yeah.
You've avoided, like you have made it clear, you're not trading him for the last 3 years or heading into his third year. There's no question that he's not the guy for you.
Yeah, I agree 100%. The other alternative would be like what's going on with Kuminga. And
that is not a good alternative.
No, like you don't want to go down that road. So if you plan on keeping them, there's no need to mess around. Don't waste any time. Sign them to the deal. The way we joke about it, but with the cap going up and all this other stuff, it's still something that if you need to down the road, you can probably, you know, move them if you need to, but that's just the going rate. You know, mm-hmm. Jalen Johnson and Jalen Suggs getting those type of deals. Keegan Murray is locked in to that type of max extension.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are confused, like here in the chat, Shakir Nabagli, the max money for a young player is different than max money for like the next contract. So these guys aren't eligible for 220. And if someone was eligible for 220, like a Luka, you know, got huge, like the max money, it's because he's met all the criteria for all NBA multiple years in a row and all that stuff. So that's the only way to get max money. De'Aaron Fox signed a 5-year, $164 million deal. That's what he got. And that was max money for it's a max rookie extension. And now he could have got more if he was like a multi-time all NBA player at that point.
The number behind the word max changes every year, doesn't it?
Well, it changes, but not by, I mean, it's all based off of percentages.
Yeah, it's not like it goes from 130 to 150. Like there's just small incremental changes in what the term what the term max represents.
Yeah, I think it's probably based off of either 25 or 30% of the salary cap, and then they get 8% raises if you sign with your own team. That's the biggest difference between signing with your own team and signing elsewhere. You know, because everybody has like a basic maximum that they can give somebody for their years of service. So there's always going to be a maximum. But then if you sign with your own team, I believe you can be under contract for one additional year. And on top of that, you get 8% raises versus 5% raises. Mm-hmm. And that 3% doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot when we're talking contracts in the, you know, hundreds of millions.
Mm. Can I ask a Kings question?
That'd be a great idea.
You talk about the LeBron Jordan situation, waiting for days, let that pop up on the show. Well, no, because we're talking game sevens. Game five hadn't even happened yet.
Jesse brought it up again. Like,
Game five hadn't even happened on Friday. So how was I talking to it at that point?
Man, brought it up out of nowhere for the second time.
But this I have been waiting to talk about since Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not like the biggest deal. Mm. Boogie Ellis gets cut on Thursday.
Mm.
And I liked what he brought to the table. I thought he was a guy that had an offensive bag, potential creator. Could be, you know, nothing in this league. Could be a overseas G League guy or whatever. But now I'm looking at kind of like Monty McNair, and it's like, well, why doesn't he ever like these guys? Why doesn't he ever like these guys that in college or something can get their own shot? It feels like he wants guys that move, that go station to station, you know, catch and shoot or whatever. And I look down the list and I look at Hardy in Dallas. You had him as a second rounder. Just moved on.
Just signed an extension, by the way.
Just moved on for him for no reason. You look at a guy like Boogie Ellis. People were upset about a lot of things on Thursday night. I'm not going to say I was upset, but I looked at it and I was like, wish this was different. As the Kings couldn't throw the ball into the Pacific Ocean in L.A., in Phoenix, Dalton Connect's just going crazy. And he was a bucket getter, a guy that can get by, and you need scoring, but you decided to go with another guy that I believe is ultimately going to be a station-to-station guy in Devin Carter. Tell me I'm off a little bit here, James, and give me some examples of Monty taking a chance on a guy in the mold of Boogie Ellis, because I can't really find him.
Yeah, I mean, they have had guys in the last couple of years at the G League level. But, like, look, if you're drafting in the top five, the top, you know, eight, then you're drafting for talent. Once you get past that, I think you're drafting a little bit for need and maybe a little bit for your system. You know, it's not just but purely talent-based. So I don't know, like I get what you're saying, and I understand, you know, there are these guys out there that are just scorers, but we're also talking about either second round picks or we're talking about undrafted players. And when you're dealing with those players, you're looking at a very, very like thin path to the NBA. Like, in order for one of these guys to make it to the NBA, everything in the world has to go right. And somehow Keon Ellis has made it, right? And you want to duplicate that, and you want to find new types of players to bring in and do this with. But I think it really does come down to the G League. It's easier to create role players at the G League level than to try to find some, you know, crazy scorer that you might be able to develop at some point. You know, like even the Kings had Jamias Ramsey, right? That's the only under 20 player that I think the Kings have ever drafted under the Monty McNair era. Everyone else is, you know, 21, 22, 23. And he's kind of a flyer because he was just like a scorer and super athlete. You don't see them take flyers on guys like that. And I think it's because they understand what the path is to playing in the league. And in order to develop guys, you want a 3-and-D wing. You want a 3-and-D, you know, 4 or 5. You want somebody who's going to come in and just play out of their mind at the 4. Like, again, go back to the Houston Rockets and look at the types of players that they were able to bring through their system and develop and make them into NBA players. It was Montrezl Harrell and Tariq Black and House, Daniel House. You know, it's these types of very specific types of role players. And I think those guys have a better opportunity to make it out of the G League and into the parent club, as opposed to trying to find a scorer, because everyone in the NBA can score. You got to be able to do the other stuff if you're going to make it.
Understandable. But then we go like, man, we don't have nobody that can create. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Malik goes down, and I'm not saying Boogie Ellis would have filled in and done great, but maybe Hardy would have. You know, you had Hardy right there, and you gave him away for nothing, and that's a creator. Like, I think they are missing, not now because you got DeMar DeRozan, but in the past they've been missing guys that can create their own shot. They're just station to station guys, and for free, you had an opportunity to take a flyer on some of these guys, and you haven't. And I just don't know if. Obviously he's got a plan, but it's like, maybe take a flyer on one of them, see what happens.
Yeah, Hardy is a very specific case, and I'm not going to get into specifics, but there was a reason why a lot of teams passed on him in the draft. The fact that the Kings took him, they didn't take him realistically. That they had traded the pick and the other team selected him. Dallas has selected him there. And the Kings weren't going to select him from what I know. But I think a better example is probably last year, where the Kings had multiple second round picks. And as opposed to drafting Trayce Jackson-Davis, who had tumbled. And of course, there's this whole, you know, word out there on the street that he only wants to play for a guaranteed contract. And that's number one. Number two, you know, he really wanted at a certain point to go to the Golden State Warriors. The Kings could have selected him. He would have signed with Sacramento. They had an ability to give him a full roster spot, and they didn't. And instead, they drafted Jalen Slauson, who after 1 year in their program is now, he was just cut by Orlando, I believe, and he's out of their program. So I think that there is a lot of time, there's too much gambling in these situations on just, you know, trying to find a diamond in the rough. But again, look at Isaac Jones and Isaiah Crawford. Like, one of those guys could make it to the NBA. And I think both of them will actually suit up and play in an NBA game this year as a two-way player. And those are both undrafted players. And again, but their specific path to the league is as 3-and-D players, is as aggressive defenders. And, you know, I don't think you're going to get that out of, like, the scorer types. You can't convert those guys is basically what I'm saying. You can't take a guy. I always make this comparison with Dante Green. You can't say, well, we're going to draft Dante Green, we're going to trade for Dante Green, thinking that he's going to be a high-level scorer at the NBA level. And if he's not, well, we'll just convert him into a 3-and-D guy. That never works, ever.
I'm not sold on how Mike and Monty even feel about those guys, because I still question how they feel about Keon. Like, Keon, I mean, Keon's not far off the type of player we were talking about, at least, you know, the humble beginnings part. And I'm still not sold that either one of them believe that he is the definitive answer to their two-guard questions, or the definitive answer to the guy being, you know, him being one of the guys that helps take this team to the next level. Maybe that's just me reading too much into words and body language and semantics and things like that, but like, I just don't feel like they're sold.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, they went out and drafted Devin Carter, you know, and mm-hmm. Devin Carter is, he's not here to replace De'Aaron Fox. That's not what the plan is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was brought in as a lottery pick to potentially be a starting shooting guard at some point for this team, even if he is undersized. You know, that's the plan. So so maybe you're right there, but I also think you can't have enough of these, you know, 3-and-D type guys, these athletic guys that play on the perimeter. You do need to keep bringing them in. And, you know, I think worst case scenario, you know, Devin Carter is going to be a much better version of Colby Jones and be more of a jack of all trades guy, but still a guy who plays defense, a guy who at the college level was an incredible rebounder, but again, a long athletic defender. And I think that that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to build around the stars that they have. And the best way to do that is try to add these guys who do the dirty work. And, you know, I think you can create those guys, but I think when it comes to Keon Ellis, you're probably right. You know, we haven't seen a definitive like Keon Ellis is starting game one. Mm-hmm. And even if he is starting game one, we don't have anything definitive that he'll be a starter by game six, you know? And
in Mike and Monty's defense, I don't know that Keon did anything to stamp the fact he should be the starting two guard game one or game six.
Yeah, but I think he did enough last year to do that, like down the stretch of the season. And if we're going to look at, you know, preseason numbers and start making claims about people,
but to be
pretty far down the list.
And sure, that's perfectly fine. But we also have to be honest that the team stunk at the tip. That's why the team was in the position that they were. Like, did he step in and play well? Sure. He didn't make up for anybody being gone. And that's an unfair position to ask him to be in, by the way, is, hey, our entire two-guard depth was just wiped out. We need you to be all things right now. But at the same time, it's like, if we're evaluating this, maybe that is, in fact, how Mike Brown and Monty McNair are evaluating this, is like, yeah, he came in, he did some good things for us, but ultimately it didn't result in us winning enough games to get where we wanted to go.
Well, that, and I think we always have to be reminded, too, that the year before, you had a shooting guard that played almost every game and helped you win 48 wins, 48 games. And that's a guy who played 30 minutes a night and was your third leading scorer, and that's Kevin Huerter. And so I don't think you ever want to just close the door on Kevin Huerter. And, you know, I think most of what we deal with Keon Ellis is, you know, like the three of us pontificating on whether we what we would do if we were Mike Brown, what we would do if we were Monty McNair. That's a big difference between what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, we're predicting or projecting or whatever we're doing. It's we see something in Keon and what we think how he can help the team. But they may not see it fully the same way. Mm-hmm. And that's what you always have to kind of be prepared to deal with, is that our opinion is just that. And their opinion is they get paid for it to not be on the radio, but to actually, you know, do this job professionally as head coach and as general manager. And they do have their own idea of what it is that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, they see a lot more than what we see on a daily basis and understand the team dynamics a lot more than we do. Another thing that I took away after watching that game on Thursday, which was atrocious, by the way. I mean, that Clippers game was awful. And it fit the mold of the entire preseason. The preseason was just dreadful. But what I took away from it was, I don't really care. Don't really care. I don't think it has any bearing on what we're going to see on Thursday and moving forward. Really don't. The only way it would have mattered is if somebody would have gotten hurt. That would have been a carryover for the regular season. I was looking at some numbers last night, and I think it's interesting to see. I had it written down, but I didn't put it in my backpack. But the best team, the Kings shot 25% or whatever from beyond the arc. Like, just awful. It was just awful. The worst team, three-point shooting team in the league last year was the Portland Trail Blazers at 34%. Like, the Kings aren't even as bad as they were from beyond the arc this preseason. They're not shooting 25% in the regular season. Like, let's just say they'll be the worst in the league. They'll shoot 35%. I don't even think they'll shoot that. I think they'll be more along the lines of 40-some-odd percent, but whatever, argument's sake. And then I thought about, like, okay, well, let me see what the best team shot in the preseason this past season. It was the Warriors, who were cooking. Like, I watched some Warriors games. They was hitting threes. They shot, as a team in the preseason, 38% from beyond the arc. Like, even the best team, for whatever reason, I think some of it has to do with some of these G League guys and stuff like that, aren't shooting well from beyond the arc in a NBA season sense. So I know, you know, the people talking about, you know, even being focused, you're not trying to miss shots in the preseason, which is true, but you're also not 100% locked into what you're doing either. And I think that does matter with shooting. Like, if you're just kind of, there's a difference between being locked in to what you're doing on every shot and then, like, kind of trying some things out or getting the shot up because you're supposed to take it. There's a different level of focus. So I look at something like that, and that was really – the three-point shooting was really the only thing that was, like, that really stuck out as an issue in the preseason to me. I think they'll rectify that, and I think the Kings will be fine come Thursday.
Well, offensively, that was the only problem. But the problem is that, you know, again, the team that led – the preseason and three-point shooting led because they played the Kings twice. You know, like, straight up. when you shoot 28 of 50 or what, 52, whatever it was, against one team, it's really hard in a 5-game stretch to bring that percentage down below 38%. Like after that, you would have had to be Sabrina Ionescu from last night, who was what, 1 of 19 or whatever it was. I mean, there's really, I 1 of 14 from three. There's really no way to bring your 3-point percentage down when you have that big blow up game. Now the Kings were the worst in preseason by a long shot. Like it wasn't even close. But I'd also point this out. Like we asked De'Aaron Fox about like sort of the concern about all this on Friday. And he's like, I don't know why everyone's really freaking out. He's like, you do understand that like game one, we were up at half, and game two, we were up at half. Like, and then the starters didn't play. He's like, so like realistically, if you want to judge us on what happened after that, that okay. He's like, but they think they're ready. And so I get that. I don't think that they played particularly well against Utah and they lost, but I also wouldn't have just flambéed them if it wasn't for the fact that they were already like 0-3 in the preseason before that. Mm-hmm. You know, that was just like kind of a dirty game and kind of got mucked up on both sides, and Kings were in it all the way down the stretch and didn't close out a game. That wasn't that big of a deal. It's so maybe we are thinking too much about, you know, the first two or three losses and not really like factoring in the fact that starters only played a certain amount of time and your bench wasn't your normal bench. Your bench was a bunch of guys who, many of which have already been cut.
That's a great lead in. That's a great lead into the next part of this conversation that I want to talk to you about. James Hamm of the Insiders helping us get ready for the Sacramento Kings schedule that tips off, of course, Thursday at the Golden 1 Center. We'll come back. We'll talk more with our insiders from the Insider. I'm going to try that again. 3, 2, 1. We'll talk more with our insider from the Insiders, James Hamm with D'Lo and Casey, return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Oh, that question come up on the chat. You want to pick that up? Because I think everyone would have an interest in that, is an update on Trey Lyles. Now, I know that for those that don't know, the team didn't practice today. We don't think that they practiced yesterday. And if they did, there was no media availability, correct?
Well, yesterday was
FanFest. Yeah.
So no, they typically on FanFest, they might come out and do like a 30-minute or walkthrough or whatever, or they'll do like a warm-up before, and then they go hit Fan Fest, and then, you know, they sign autographs and do whatever it is they do for Fan Fest. There was allegedly a media availability yesterday, but none of the media was there because most people were at 49ers Chiefs game. Yeah. So and to be honest with you, I haven't gone to Fan Fest in a long time. It really is for the fans. Like there's not typically media availability on those things. And all my years covering the team. So when I heard that there was like a small media availability, if anyone was there yesterday, I was surprised by that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they didn't practice on Saturday either. They had a day off on Saturday and then Fan Fest on Sunday. And then today they did not practice. They either had a film study or they had, you know, they have NBA requirements that they have to do. Like they'll have to go watch points of emphasis and all that stuff. So there, it could be one of those days. But we were told they were going to have a light shooting day, one of these days. So they would not have practice. So tomorrow and Wednesday they'll practice. Thursday is opening night. We'll have, you know, 11 o'clock, media availability for shoot around.
That's a good question from Securing the Bagley. Does anyone know if Devin had to sing or dance? Because well, I can't picture it.
Look, somebody got to let it. So I listened to you guys all the way down there, right? And I saw the video and it was.
Yeah, right?
All right.
Jesse over That's there stalling him out.
All right. Well, you asked, was he going to dance at FanFest? And it reminded me, you know what happened last FanFest? I don't know what happened this year, but you know what happened last FanFest? Sasha refused to dance.
Well, that's why Sasha's not here.
That's what I'm saying.
Anymore.
He ain't around here too much.
That's why Sasha's not here anymore.
Sasha literally was like, no, I'm not doing it. Crowd, come on. Little Timmy in the front row. Come on, Sasha. No, I'm not doing it. and sat down.
It's also possible Sasha was 35. I mean, just be honest.
Yeah, get over here, Rook, and dance. What you talking about?
Hold on. Only thing, I searched Devin Carter on Twitter just to see what popped up, and so I could be wrong. I could be. This can't be right. Somebody who was there, help me with this. He's doing the opening remarks. He's welcoming everyone to the stadium, to the Golden One Center. I could be wrong. I think he's reading notes off his phone.
Oh, no, yeah, he's definitely reading.
Is he reading
notes?
Yeah,
he's reading. He's definitely reading. Well, it's first Fan Fest. Wants to make sure he gets it right.
Yes, welcome. Did he not know the name of the Golden One Center? Like, what information did he need to know that was on his notes app? James, I demand that tomorrow at 12:15, you walk up to Devin Carter and say, were you reading from a notes app at FanFest? The people deserve to know. Boy, I sound like I hate Devin Carter the last 2 days. My goodness. Devin Carter hate train over here.
Here's the problem. Devin Carter doesn't have to talk to us because
he's injured. Right. That's
right. And he doesn't have to talk to us until January, I think. Like, we can make a request, but realistically, he doesn't have to talk to
us. Hey, Shannon, was Devin reading from notes?
I mean, like you said, I'm trying to figure out what he's... Maybe it is the arena.
Maybe he forgot. Maybe he doesn't know the name of the Golden One Center. Maybe he just had to remember to say, welcome.
Or if he forgot it. I mean, he shouldn't. I was about to use an example. He shouldn't have forgot it, but maybe he did. Like, what's the name of the Phoenix Suns arena?
The Footprint Arena?
I don't think it's that no more.
Phoenix Suns Arena?
I think it might be Phoenix Suns Arena.
Well, nailed it.
But the point is...
Talking Stick is old, right? Wasn't Talking Stick before?
Yeah. But the point is, I'm asking you to do that, and this is where it's not the same comparison. I'm asking you to do this on the fly. You weren't drafted to Phoenix 4 months ago and should know the name of the arena.
You practice at the Golden One Center. All right, I'm gonna leave him alone because it's been a little harsh on Devin Carter the last couple of days. The question was, James, and I know he was out on the court the last practice you were at. Trey Lyles, do we know anything about Trey?
No, we're kind of going through this over during the break. So the Kings have a very strict return to practice like regimen, and some players go right through the return to practice thing. And it depends on how long a player's out. So when Trey comes back, he will have been gone like, I think it's almost 6 weeks. So that's a long time to sit. So what they did is on Friday, he was playing one-on-one against Jawad Williams, one of the assistant coaches. And then once you play one-on-one, they have you come in the next day. They're like, okay, how are we feeling? Mm-hmm. Like, are you sore? Is there soreness in the area where you're injured? How do we feel? And then what they do is, as a, like, we always talk about this return to play, and we talk about the one-on-one, 2v2, 3v3, 5v5. They keep expanding the court, right? And so players, like, again, when you're playing two-on-two, it's just a bigger game than when you're playing a one-on-one, and there's moving and cutting. When you're playing three-on-three, again, now we're using the whole half court. When you get to five-on-five, that's when they start running you up and down the court. And again, it's about how do you feel the next day? Like, or do you feel something right now in your groin and can you not play anymore right now? And sometimes that's the issue. It's like, oh no, I'm still sore. And then sometimes it's like, hey, I have some swelling the next day. And then sometimes it's like, no, I feel great. And so if you clear one step, then you go on to the next. And they're always sort of, again, expanding the court, and especially with the groin pull, they're going to want to make sure he can run up and down a court, five on five full court for at least one or two practices, because that's the biggest thing with this type of injury is his ability to stop and start. And, you know, like taking off and like dunking a basketball might be an issue. He might not have like his pop, but realistically you're worried about whether he can like put on the brakes without just running into the front row. 'Cause that's part of the issue with a groin pull.
Because I know you said sometimes they just don't even go through the process in certain situations, but in your opinion, because we haven't even really heard anything about Trey Lyles, the possibility of him playing opening night seems kind of slim.
Oh yeah. No way. No way. I don't think there's any way, because Friday was supposed to be, that's 3 weeks where we might get an update, and we didn't. So like sometime during this week, you would think that there would be an update. And so far we haven't seen that. So I believe it was 3 weeks on Friday. I might be wrong about that. I don't think it's this coming week. It was a couple of days before training camp started. Yeah. So look, if he misses the first week of the season, I wouldn't be surprised. It might be a little bit longer than that. You know, just because his return to play. So say a player gets sick and misses three games. Mm-hmm. They're not doing return to play for that. They're not doing the 5-on-5, and they might want them to participate in practice first if there is a practice. But if not, that's like too short of a window for them to get out of shape or anything. But you can fall out of basketball shape really, really quickly at the NBA level. So that's why we usually, if a player misses 10 days, 15 days, that's when you start seeing like at least an abbreviated return to play. But with a longer injury like this with Trey, it's going to be, you know, it'll probably be a week of buildup to get him, maybe a little bit longer. And we saw, to be honest, we saw the same exact thing last year. And he missed, what, the first 13 games of the season? Yeah. Where, you know, but he got hurt right at the end. He pulled a calf muscle, I think, right before either the final preseason game or right before the opener. So, yeah, it's just a bummer that he keeps having these injuries, like, leading into camp or coming out of camp.
Just a couple of heads-up things, not related to the Sacramento Kings, but as we mentioned earlier, Kyle Shanahan is speaking to the media now. He does confirm that Brandon Ayuk has a torn ACL in his right knee. He will need surgery. He is out for the season. He also said Deebo Samuel is dealing with a form of pneumonia. He was struggling to breathe yesterday, which was why he didn't play long. He had some fluid in his lungs, and he's in the hospital. That's not past tense. He is in the hospital right now, and there's no timeline right now for Deebo Samuel's return. So those are a couple of updates from Kyle Shanahan, again, who is speaking to the media right now. Sorry to interrupt the Kings conversation, but more on George Kittle, Chris Conley day-to-day. Well, that's good news. At least there's no – yeah, he's out for the year, too.
Day-to-day is
All right, day-to-day. Good news, guys. Man, what a tough 7 weeks it's been for the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Yeah, brutal.
And, man, this is – honestly, it's moments like this. And I know the Kings went through it at the end of last year, but that's the, like, thing. And I don't think the 49ers season is derailed at all. Mm-hmm. But – these are the types of things that, like, you just need so much to go right for you. And while I thought the argument as to why the Kings were good was dumb, but a lot did go right that first year with Mike Brown. It didn't quite go right at the end of last year. And you see all of this happening in San Francisco and you go, man, I hope this doesn't happen to Sacramento. I hope this doesn't happen to the Kings. You know, you need these guys. And they're already kind of behind the eight ball because you just kind of laid out a potential timeline for return for Trey Lyles. We don't know what's going on with Kevin Herter yet.
Yeah.
And those are key pieces. Like you were talking before the break, Hammer, about, you know, rotation, the preseason and the rotation and rotation guys with guys that have been cut. So many important components to the Kings' second unit haven't played a second yet.
No, that's true. And I mean, look, that's why they brought in Doug McDermott last week. Like, you can tell they're feeling it right now. They're like, okay, well, we're not at full strength and we don't know when we're going to be at full strength. So we probably need to bring someone in who doesn't shy away from coming in here and just throwing up the ball every single time he touches it. It's okay to have players like that, especially veteran players that know how to play in your system, that can read and react like super quick. Like, I don't blame them for bringing in McDermott, especially if you think, you know, Kevin Herter might be out for a little while, or you know, heck, you can probably even go push Kevin over and have him play a little bit of, have him and McDermott play some three and four for stretches until you get healthy at that four position. So, like, you need veterans on this team. You need guys who understand the game. And what you can't do is you can't get, like, the first eight games of the season, you're playing a couple of two-way players, major minutes, because that's what you got. Yeah. And that's not fair to them, and it's not fair to Mike Brown. So, again, I think the move to go get McDermott was a lot because of, you know, whether or not Kevin will be ready for the opener, or whether or not Trey will be open the first week or first 2 weeks of the season. You're definitely trying to make sure that you at least have some sort of scoring punch outside of Malik Monk off the bench. And if you can't guarantee that you're going to have that, then you better go manufacture. You got better go find it. And so that's what I think we saw McDermott.
Yeah, it's so when I was like doing research and trying to break some things down about like what it really looked like with the Kings preseason, I come to find out Kobe Jones, Mason Jones, Boogie Ellis, you know, those guys, they took a lot of shots in the preseason. And I'm not saying they like were awful and missed a whole bunch, but that contributed to some of these percentages that we saw. And to James's point, yeah, you don't want to go into the season where they got to take as many shots or anything close to what they took in the preseason. Obviously, you'll have your starters and your big-time players playing more minutes. But in those times when they don't, you probably still want to have a guy like Doug McDermott there. Because like those guys took as many shots than a lot of the big guys we talked about. Like, I think Boogie Ellis was at like 24 shots. Fox took like 27, I think, or something like that. Like, they took a lot of
shots.
Get
them up, kid.
They took a lot of shots, and you don't want to go into the real basketball with that type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Mike Brown has to play his starters 38, 39 minutes a game the first week of the season, he will. Like, it's about winning. Once it comes down to opening night, like, it's game on. Like, every game counts. You saw what happened last year. If you trick off a couple of games, like, every game counts. So he's going to have to do whatever he has to do while some of these guys are getting healthy in order to put this thing together, to make sure that they're sort of melting in the pot together, that they're figuring out how to work together. And it's not just a simple cut and dry, like, hey, you know, everyone's here and healthy and ready. That's just not the case. So you gotta mix and match the way you have to. And I think having a veteran like Doug, just like at the last second, if you need him to play 18 minutes in a game, you know he's got it in his bag, and you know he's not going to be shy, and he's not going to hesitate. He might not be great defensively. You know, he might not like lead your team in rebounding, but he knows how to play the game at a high level. And I think there are a couple other guys still out there that you could probably, if you think that some of these injuries are going to be long-term, you might start digging in a little bit deeper and figuring out if a Jay Crowder is ready to play, figuring out if like a Nasir Little who got waived this week, or Lonnie Walker who got waived this week, if those guys are interested in coming in again and have another tryout or playing a little bit. You just have to figure out like on the fly if you're Mike Brown.
That's the name that kept popping up last week. Was to
Jay Crowder.
Yep. Even remotely realistic in your opinion?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know if like Jay is looking at a place like Sacramento. He might be hoping for like a Milwaukee or a, you know, a team like that. But
I mean, why not? If you can look at a spot where you might be able to play, even if it's short term, let's say you come in and you play for, you know, like a month, and then they don't need you anymore and they cut you. Mm-hmm. At least you know that you played during that month, because they're going to need the bodies and you're going to get some actual PT. So when you go on to the next spot, you'll be in game shape and ready to roll. Like I think there is like sort of, you know, an advantage to that. I also think it's interesting the Kings went with more of an offensive player than a defensive player when it came to that. But you know, that's kind of the dynamic that we've
seen.
It's
always what they do. They talk about defense, and then they go find guys who can do stuff for them offensively.
Yeah. I like McDermott, though. Like, I, again, if he wants to fit in, and You know, and also I think we learned McDermott's contract is a league minimum deal, so it's like 3.2 or $3.3 million bucks. Of that, you know, the Kings are going to pay 2.1 million of that, or 2.1 will count against their cap. But also 750,000 is guaranteed. So he didn't even get a full guaranteed deal. So that means, like, for him to, that probably gets him till mid December, where he would, you know, if he's hit mid December, he's probably made about 750,000, where like a young player, if they get a $500,000, you know, what's his name? Orlando Robinson. He got 500,000. So that's basically a quarter of the season, because he makes 2 million bucks. So yeah, the more money you make, the longer you're in the league, the shorter amount of time that you're going to be able to stick around for that 750,000 guarantee.
You said you talked, or you guys talked to De'Aaron Fox about, you know, the preseason and, you know, and how they felt about it. Was that the consensus, that they were just kind of looking around like, I don't know why you guys, while we're all like bugging, like, you guys can't make a three. What the hell is wrong with you? Like, they're like, why are you guys tripping? Was that the consensus with what everybody you talked to?
Well, the other person we talked to was Doug McDermott, who literally had just walked in the door. Even that story is wild. We talked about that on Friday a little bit, but man, that was absolutely crazy. He agreed to a deal on Tuesday night. Wednesday morning, flew to Sacramento from Phoenix, where he took his physical, which took, you know, like 4 or 5 hours, whatever it takes. Then he boarded a plane for LA, got to LA at 10 o'clock Wednesday night, made it to shoot around on Thursday, sat down with Jay Triano, sat down with Luke Laux to go over the offensive and defensive schemes, and then played 25 minutes. Like, for a dude who hadn't like gone through a training camp or a return to play or a buildup or anything else, like, hey man, you ready to go? Like, yeah, I'm good. So
I'm sorry. I had to chuckle at this. Ian Rappaport just tweeted, Coach Mike Shanahan confirms that Christian McCaffrey is unlikely to play this Sunday versus the Cowboys, and says there's a better chance after next week's bye.
Yeah.
Coach Mike Shanahan.
Yeah, I was wondering if maybe you said, I didn't want to say nothing.
Coach Mike Shanahan confirms that Christian McCaffrey is unlikely to play Sunday versus the Cowboys.
I do that on occasion.
Yeah, a lot of the old timers do, James. That's all right. The old time football guys.
I
mean,
if I'm him, I would go in and fix it in Twitter real quick, but yeah.
I'm sure Ian did. I'm sure he fixed it. I think it's funny. I think, well, it was probably it was one of the big time broadcasts called Kyle Mike at some point this year already.
Yeah, probably Al.
Well, somebody keeps calling it out. The red area and not the red zone. I don't.
Who calls it that?
Jesus, Tom Brady.
Yeah, I was about to say, didn't Tom
did Brady
say that?
Call it the red area?
He calls it the red area nonstop.
Maybe that's like, what they call weird. It. Maybe that's what they call it in the locker rooms.
I'm all for it, though. It reminds me.
I think
of
Tom's
Brown.
Gotten a lot better, by the way.
Yeah, I think
Tom.
Oh,
is
yeah.
Tom. Yeah. Tom should not be judged on that week one performance. Like he has a much more of a personality, and I feel like he's gotten good. Red area is wild, though.
I like that. Yeah. It reminds me of Hubie Brown, the painted area.
Yeah.
Red area.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but calling it the red area like 7 times a game.
it sounds crazy.
Man, what are we doing here?
Like, Tommy, they got creams for that. Like, what are we doing right here?
You can even get it in a spray form, I think.
Go to the doctor or something.
Put some talcum powder on there.
Goodness gracious.
A little gold bomb for that.
Gold bomb.
Hammer, how different do you think things are going to be for the Kings on Thursday? Based on what we've seen, how different do you think it'll be on Thursday?
I don't think we're going to see the same team that we've seen through the preseason. I think they're going to be just perfectly fine. And that's going to be a really, really good, highly contested game. At least that's what I'm sort of prepping for. Mm-hmm. You look at the first 10 games of the season, and they have every opportunity to get off to a great start. And if they don't, we're going to look at preseason and keep pointing back to it. But like, if they just look like the team that came out 2 years ago, or even the team that, you know, we saw for most of last season, like the good team we saw last season, not the one that, you know, would lose the bad games, but I think they'll be perfectly fine. And I think they've got a really good chance to get off to a good start.
I agree. I think, and whatever, you know, they come out and play well on Thursday, not all their problems are gone. Like, they still got issues that they need to work on throughout the season, whether they win or lose. But I think, like Ham just said, you're going to see a good, typical NBA basketball game from the Kings on Thursday.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I'm ready for it.
Isn't Minnesota one of those teams that, not that the Kings, like, match up well in terms of size with anyone in the league, but isn't Minnesota one of the worst?
No, it's changed a little bit.
I mean, they went
2-1.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, I guess Julius isn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Cat stretching the floor, hitting threes is a big deal. Cat being down low or whatever with Rudy. Yeah, I guess I felt like that was always. They're really physical, too. That was always a thing last year. And if Elston's still there, I'm sure he wants to kick the Kings' ass every time he comes around. So
yeah. That's a very good team, and they've still got a ton of talent. They made a huge change, and when you make a move that size with Cat going out, that's like a cultural shift, and we have to see how that works out for them, especially early in the season. I think they'll be a much different team 35 games in, 40 games in, than they are in the first, like, 12 when the Kings play them three times.
Oh, the Lakers. Yeah, that's a good one, too. All right, I think we have to go. Jesse's making us end the show. We're going to head over to 102.5, give away some tickets to Hip Hop Made the Bay. Tap in with us. Welcome Prize Picks. Big thanks to Map Training. And make sure you are locked back in here with us, beginning with James and Kyle, the Insiders, 10 a.m. here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos Ravens. Basketball's back tomorrow.